Welcome to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and you say you want to make it to the top? Well, I say, why would you want that? That kind of success requires personal growth. Personal growth is difficult, stressful, and risky. Put those adjectives in front of anything else, and you'd run away as fast as you could. Well, don't run away, because my guest, Jason Seiden, author of Self-Destruct, is going to be joining us to help us to understand that here on Tell Me Your Story. Stay tuned. And welcome. I'm Richard Dugan. It's a beautiful Saturday afternoon here on the Central Coast in the front end of September. This is the month of fall, and I'm looking for it, and I don't know where it is. Speaking of fall and the derivatives thereof, have you experienced failure in your life and in your career and those aspects? And you might even ask yourself, why are we talking about failure? I thought this was about making dreams come true. Well, we're going to look at it from a little different point of view today. We're going to be talking with the author of a book called How to Self-Destruct, Making the Least of What's Left of Your Career. And we're going to find out how that all plays into the rest of your life, depending upon where you might be. And Jason Seiden, welcome to our program. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Kind of an unusual title to encourage people to self-destruct. What do you mean by self-destruct?
Well, I mean exactly what you think I mean, but let me be very clear and upfront that I am one of the world's biggest optimists. I want people to succeed. I am all about that. It's just that, you know, I spent, when I was as a consultant, all consultants write books. It's kind of comes with the territory. And when I was looking for my niche, I'm doing all this research and I'm finding, you know what, we've cracked the code on how to success. We cracked it a long time ago. You know, there was a guy who came down from a mountain a few thousand years ago with 10 little rules on how to live a good life. And a few thousand years later, some scientists said, hey, you know what, we can, you know, we've built upon that. We now know how to operate within complex organizations. We know how to lead people and manage people and be followers and do all the things we need to do. That was the earlier part of the 20th century. So here we are, thousands of years we've known how to lead a good life. Generations, two, three generations, we've known how to lead and follow and actually work in complex organizations, and we're still not doing it. And it just kind of struck me as I was looking at all these titles. The problem is not in knowledge. The problem is not that we don't know what to do. The problem is we don't execute. So I wanted to write a book that kind of held a mirror up to people and said, stop looking for answers you already know. Let's just, you know, let's treat this like an optical illusion. Let's tilt the lens a little bit and get everybody to focus on where they should be focused, which is on execution. So How to Self-Destruct really takes a look at the self-sabotage, the behaviors people actually engage in that they think are good that actually lead to ruin. And if they thought about them for a few minutes, they would make the connection and they can make the adjustments. They know the adjustments to make at that point.
So you're saying, in essence, that we're now looking more at the attributes of failure and how they benefit us, so to speak?
Yeah, you know what? It's like that optical illusion. You can look at the vase or you could look at the faces. You're seeing the same picture both ways. It's just, where do you want to put the focus?
Okay.
And I'm, you know, since the earlier part of the 20th century in the realm of organizational leadership, we've been putting the focus on success. We've been putting the focus on the vase. Look around. You know, we're Enron, MCI, WorldCom, Tyco, you know, now we got Bear Stearns. It doesn't stop. So maybe we should look at the faces instead of the vase. Maybe we should study what leads to failure, and from there we can learn how to succeed.
Because we keep looking at and trying to analyze, well, what will drive me or take me to success, and for whatever reason it's out of some of our grasps, it seems as though. But as you say, we all have had failure, but we never want to look at that. As a matter of fact, sometimes we don't even want to acknowledge that we failed.
That's exactly it.
Okay. So give me, so to speak, a synopsis of from your personal experiences, maybe more in depth, you know, why was it important for you to look at it from that perspective? Because it seems to me, with your bio, that you've been pretty successful. You haven't needed to look at the faces. You've you can look at the vase and you're doing just fine.
Yeah, you know what? I'm a walking case study in how to mess up a good thing. I do a lot of assessment work as part of my work, and I've thrown out people with blue chip resumes, and I go in, and those are always interesting conversations when I'm talking to a CEO, and I say, you know, this candidate's just not for you, and they say, what do you mean? He went to, you know, if he's got my resume, he went to Wharton undergrad, he went to Kellogg graduate school, he's got this entrepreneurial experience, he's got, I'm like, yeah, look, but you know what? That's all in the past. If he can't do the job you're asking him to do in the future, then what's it good for? You know, we got to go a little bit beyond the surface, and you know, a simple way of kind of thinking why look at failure is think of a student who sees himself as smart. I am a smart student, but the student's doing poorly in math class. It's like, all right, I'm smart, but I'm doing poorly in math. Well, if that student's really come to believe that he's smart, he's not going to engage in the behaviors that are going to let him succeed. Why? Because smart students don't do things like go see tutors or get extra help or raise their hand and say, I don't know, in class. Smart students are supposed to have the answers. So here, this belief that, hey, I'm already smart, is going to lead this student to actually fail. And, you know, so just because somebody's got a blue-chip resume, in a lot of ways, in some ways it can work against them, but in a lot of ways, to me, that means nothing. You know, that just means that they've got a different set of issues that they're up against. Somebody who's been told that they can't do it and they're not this, they don't have those capabilities. Well, certainly if they start to believe those limiting beliefs, you know, they got a problem. But on the other side, if somebody's been told, look, you're great and your successes will guarantee you success in the future, you know what, they got the same issue because now their ego is going to block them off from learning also. So either way, you know, I want to dive in and I want to challenge those limiting beliefs, and I want to do it sideways and do it in a way that gets people to ask the right kinds of questions at the right time.
But you're not asking people to go out and fail. You're asking them to look at their failures of the past so they can learn from those various lessons so that they can succeed in the future.
I know.
And that's the twist.
Right. Reflect on what you've actually done and learn from experience.
Mm-hmm.
What a novel concept.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So and you have a vast and diverse a series of pieces of information in here in the book Self-Destruct, which is the title of the book,
mm-hmm.
and you have different sections here taking down your career. Which again, I remember somebody sharing with me the goal, or I should say, the process that we are in throughout our lives is not to work. The process is to look for work. That is our job. In other words, my job is not to be a radio producer. My job is to look for work as a radio producer for the rest of my life.
Right.
And I thought, well, that takes all the fun out of it because I don't want to look for work the rest of my life. I want to work, if you will, because I enjoy this.
But that's it. But I mean, that's right in a lot of ways. One of the things that I say in the book is there's a difference between being passionate about your work and being in love with what you do. And if you are passionate about your work, you know, somebody says, hey, you know, why do you do this? Well, if you're passionate about it, you're likely to give an answer to say, I have no idea. You'd have to be crazy to do what I do. The
mm-hmm.
hours are long. The pay's not enough. If there's just something about it, I'm energized about it. And I'm constantly looking for more and to do better and more and to serve people and all this other stuff. When you're in love with your work, when you stop searching for it and you... Now you put up walls, right? Now the answer to the question, why do you do what you do, is, you know what, it's the best job in the world. I don't know why everybody doesn't want this job. It's cushy and easy and,
mm-hmm.
you know, and fun. But now you're resistant to change, and you have your own little, you got your own little box.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime somebody's going to try and encroach on that box, you're going to bristle. You know, hey, I love this job. Get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're resistant to learning. You're resistant to change. And the only thing that's true, and you know, sure as God put little green apples on this earth, somebody is going to encroach on your box. It's not going to last forever.
Yeah, I remember hearing those stories, too, about there's always someone above you that you are trying to, in essence, move into their slot, and there's always going to be somebody below you who is going to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
and that's just the process, the natural, so to speak, the natural order of things in the workaday world. If someone is in, because this was one of the thoughts that came to me as I'm going through the book, that if somebody is in a job that they do enjoy, that they're passionate about, and or, you know, and I, again, your explanations notwithstanding, that the type of work they're doing, not necessarily the place that they are working,
mm-hmm.
okay, because workplaces change. I know this, especially being in radio for almost 30 years. Workplaces change.
Right.
But the types of work that I have done over the last some 30 years has also moved forward with technology and so forth, but it's still been the same kind of work that I truly do enjoy doing. And so there are going to be people like myself who are in a wonderful place.
Right.
Is this book for those of us for those of us who are in that place, or or just for those people who are discontented?
No, you know what? It's there's something in here for everybody. I think the people who will be able to get the most out of it as a tool are the people who have the ambition, you know, who want to reach for the brass ring. I think the folks who are looking to hold on to the work that they've got, I think it's just a funny book, and you're going to get a really good laugh about all the characters around you who are chasing the brass ring for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you do love what you do, I think one of the problems that we have in society is we have this archetype of success of, and kind of like the quintessential CEO with the private jet and the mansions and the whole nine yards, and we can scoff at them and kind of poo-poo them all we want in the media. You know, we see the Robb Report when we're going through the airport, and we, you know, we're stealing glances. You know, there's a reason why people are watching, you know, The Fabulous Life Of, and right, we kind of want that for ourselves. If you really do, if you're passionate about your work, you're going to have to let go of that archetype. And that's one of the things that you could get out of this book, is how to do that. And you can, I've coached a number of people who are feeling stressed because they enjoy what they do. They don't necessarily want to manage people who do what they do. They want to do the job.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to know how to say no to the people who are trying to pull them up in their organizations. And they need to know how to say no in a politically astute way that doesn't get them fired, but just gets people to realize, hey, you know what? I'm happy to spend the rest of my career doing this work. Don't ask me to manage. Don't ask me to lead. Don't ask me to deal with the politics in the organization. Set me up to be successful doing my job.
We're going to talk more about this and how it spills over into other areas of our lives here on Tell Me Your Story. Jason Seiden is my guest. He has a website, too, and it is Jason Seiden. That's SEIDEN.com, JasonSeiden.com. The book is entitled How to Self-Destruct, Making the Least of What's Left of Your Career. And we are going to take another look at that as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story. Stay with us. I'm Richard Dugan. We are streaming live on the internet at richarddugan.com. Click on the Listen Live link. Don't go away. Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan here on the program Saturday afternoons, 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. I think that's how they phrase it before we go to get off of Daylight Savings Time here in the West. And we're talking with Jason Seiden, the author of Self-Destruct, which is not exactly, if you've been listening, it's not exactly what he's asking you to do, but he's asking you to take a look at those parts of your life where you have failed, where you have been challenged, and the challenges came about because you didn't quite make it to the next milestone that you were hoping for, and you're still working towards that and wondering why you're not getting there. Maybe you need to take a look, not so much at how to get there, but why it is that you haven't gotten there. Take a look at those aspects of it. And if I've summarized that fairly well, Jason, I'd kind of like to take a look at how this, as I mentioned before the break, spills over into other parts of our lives, both our relationships, our personal lives, and maybe even into our spiritual lives as well, in terms of, you know, goal setting. And I know that a lot of people don't like, you know, they don't really set goals per se for their personal lives. Okay, I'm going to be married by the age of 30, and I'm going to have 5.6 kids by the time I'm 40, and I'm going to live in a three-bedroom, two-and-a-half bath, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all the accoutrements of that lifestyle and or American dream. And I'm not even sure how you could quantify any kind of a goal on a spiritual level, unless you were, you know, looking
right
to definitely commune with God 24/7, in which case you wouldn't be relating with too many people.
Right. Well, you know, just hey, I want to make contact once.
I'm with you on that.
Right. We could achieve that goal right quick. Yeah, but that's not, I think, what we're talking about.
So let's talk about the spillover, if you will, or how do we look at this whole aspect in terms of achieving the things that we really want in our lives.
Well, I think the first thing that people need to recognize is that these things are all linked. And, you know, the irony is one of the things I see as a coach is people will, there's a tool out there called the Balanced Scorecard, for instance. People will say, okay, these things are all linked, so I'm going to have my family goals, I'm going to have my spiritual goals, I'm going to have my health goals, I'm going to have my career goals, and then I've got, you know, the work goals at work, and I'm going to focus on each of these. Well, it doesn't work like that. As soon as you do that, you've actually divided them up. They're not linked anymore. You've got different goals and different little silos. There's definitely a spillover effect. A perfect example of that is the person who goes home and just armchair quarterbacks his or her friend's lives. You know, goes home, gossips, who broke up with who, what's going on, oh, my brother-in-law's an idiot, he should do this, I can't believe my sister's doing, right? Now this person's going to go to work, and this person just spent the 6 hours before they went to sleep the night before training themselves to be a talker instead of a doer, right? Instead of picking up the phone and solving a problem, instead of focusing on themselves and saying, hey, I'll just make my own life better here, they train themselves to be a gossip. Now they go to work. What do you think they're going to do at work?
Mm.
You know, they're going to go to church or temple or wherever they go, and they're going to hear a sermon about leading a good life. You think they're going to be reflective of themselves, or you think they're going to look at all the people around them and go, yeah, you're listening, folks? He's talking to you. There's definitely a spillover, and the mechanism of that spillover is a little more subtle than people realize.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that they've been training themselves 5 days for those 6 hours before they go to sleep,
right.
And then they go one day to church, if you will, or whatever their religious life is.
That's exactly it.
It's way out of whack. It's out of balance.
That's exactly it. You don't get good by just showing up for a couple hours on a Sunday morning. Right. You get good by living it every day.
I have a feeling that a lot of blogs would shut down if we stopped doing that kind of stuff on the Internet, because that seems to me what many blogs are there to do is nothing more than complain about what the other guy's doing. And I heard the old phrase, if you can't do, you talk.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know what? It's, and I just took a blog entry down. I put one up on Sarah Palin. And I just took the assessment process that I use. It's sort of an objective, here's what I see when I look at her objectively, the same way I would do if I were assessing somebody in a professional context.
Mm-hmm.
And the very first response I got was calling me a political hack. And now, if you read my blog, you're going to see countless things that ding people on both sides of the aisle. You know, I had a Facebook line of, like, you know, two words for the election, "Oh Canada." So I am an equal opportunity, disappointed voter here.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. People get so riled that they're going to see what they want to see, and it becomes very difficult after a while to step back and see things objectively.
So what we need to do is really be more introspective, spend less time commenting on those things that are on the blog in that respect, and spend more time looking in the mirror.
It would be great. That would be fantastic. What I have found, we have this little thing called an ego, and ego really doesn't want to look in the mirror. And he goes, it's like that Saturday Night Live skit, I'm good enough, and I'm smart enough, and gosh darn it, people like me. Yeah, you look in the mirror, you might not see that that's quite as true as you thought it was. And what a shock to the system that would be, right?
Mm-hmm. But maybe that's what we need from time to time, because that is to sort of take a look at our failures, our foibles, those things that they say have developed the character within us. There are even those who are starting to say that, you know, we don't really need these challenges to develop the character within us, that we can develop that through other means other than creating these hurdles that we are constantly putting in front of ourselves?
Well, you know what? The best thing, first of all, I'm a big fan of the 2x4 upside the head. How to self-destruct is that with some humor. I find people really are willing to look at themselves if the lesson is wrapped in humor, mm-hmm. and they get to laugh at others at the same time as themselves, and if the person pointing out the joke is also pointing the finger at himself. So I believe me, I am not above any of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just want to say that. And to your last point, the best thing that I've heard, and look, none of us know, right? When this race is over and we all die and we get to the other side, some of us are going to be right, some of us are going to be wrong. The best thing that I heard in the philosophy that governs my life is we are angels on Outward Bound. This is an extreme vacation. You know, the introverted, hey, I have this spiritual sensibility and I can fathom infinity, and yet I am bound by this body and I got to take care of some stuff every day and I got to live. And that whole thing is just like going on Outward Bound and dealing with, you know, all of the all of the issues and and saying, hey, you know what? I back home I got the cars and everything else, but I'm just going to use a couple of ropes and some crampons, and I'm going to figure out how to do it this way.
Yeah.
And, you know, once you do that, you don't need any additional challenges. It's like waking up and living is a challenge. Just try and do it the best you can.
Absolutely. My guest, Jason Seiden, author of Self-Destruct, How to Do It, and How to Do It to Your Career and all of the other aspects of your life so that you can learn and grow and again, achieve the things that you want. We're just sharing with you a different perspective here on the program. The views expressed are not necessarily those of the staff, management, ownership, or advertisers of the station. We ask you to stay tuned. RichardDugan.com is the website. Listen live at RichardDugan.com and also JasonSeiden.com. Stay with us. This is Tell Me Your Story. This is Tell Me Your Story. I am Richard Dugan, and my guest is Jason Seiden. He is the author of How to Self-Destruct, Making the Least of What's Left of Your Career. And there may be a whole lot left, but is it really where you want to be and what you want to do for the rest of your life? If you're enjoying it, wonderful. And as he mentioned earlier in the program, you don't want to manage those who do your job. You want to do the job you're doing. Then maybe this is what you want to take a look at. You can hear us live on the internet at RichardDugan.com, and stay with us. There's more to come with Jason Seiden. This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and I thank you for joining us here on the program as we light the fuse to to self-destruct our own careers, if that is our choice. And again, I want to remind you that the website, if you want to check it out, is jasonseiden.com. You can get there through richarddugan.com. Just go to the radio show's page. And I think we're on page 4 now because we haven't broken down into 4-month periods. And can you believe it, folks? It was 1 year ago this Saturday, today, it was 1 year ago that we started this radio program, and it's kind of exciting. I guess this would be the 53rd program in our series here on Tell Me Your Story, and it is a great deal of fun to bring these programs to you, and to bring Jason Seiden to you as well, dealing with self-destruction. But we're not talking about self-destruction by setting off some C4 somewhere. We're just talking about taking a look at those things that we've been doing to self-destruct, if you will, or fail at, over the course of time in our lives up to this point, and learning from those elements that have brought us to that failure point and saying, you know what, I'm not going to do that anymore. That doesn't work. And start moving forward. Now, we were also talking about the spiritual aspects, goals and things of that nature. And a lot of folks kind of believe in the concept of guardian angels, if you will. There's this other entity outside ourselves that's kind of watching over us. And you actually have a little example of that. We were just getting into that during the break there. Can you share with us a little bit about this concept of guardian angels?
Yeah, happy birthday, by the way.
Well, thank you.
You know what? We were talking about, being angels and outward bound and living this life here on earth and this being a struggle unto itself. And as long as you're here, you may as well learn and grow. I mean, that's the point of outward bound. Maybe that's the point of life. One of the interesting things is I do know a lot of folks who are spiritual and some of them are still hard workers and other ones kind of want to wait and say, look, you know what, I will be saved. You know, someone else is going to come down and protect me. And it just strikes me as odd that we kind of picture these angels as these ethereal beings. You know, they whisper in our ears, and it's intuition. And, you know, they got to scream just to be heard as a whisper. And maybe, just maybe, if we're lucky, we might see one once in a lifetime or hear something or experience just the slightest little vibration. But here you are. You got two good arms. You got two good legs. You got the ability to pick up your phone and make a phone call. You got the ability to hold a door for someone. You yourself have more control over your destiny than any angel is going to be able to have for you, and you know, don't throw that away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have the choice to listen to your intuition or not. So ultimately, it's on you. Even when you get the help from the other side, it's still on you. And so it is one of the ways that I have in the book, How to Self-Destruct. If you want to leverage your spirituality, self-destruct, put your faith in something external to yourself. I had a friend who said, he said, hey, you know what, we could use more angels. I said, we don't need more. We just got to make better use of the 6 billion angels we already have here on the planet.
Yes, I agree with you. Absolutely. I remember hearing something from the old Star Trek Next Generation episode where the general topic rolling through the episode had to do with trust. And Data turns to Riker near the end and says, but when you trust and someone betrays you, is it better not to trust? And Riker, long pause, says, no.
Right.
It is not. It is better to trust.
Yeah, take the risk.
Yeah.
Take the risk. How to Self-Destruct closes with a quote. It's my favorite quote, and it's one of my only original quote. Life is like a vacation. You go on a vacation, one of two things is probably going to happen. You're either going to have a great vacation, or you're going to have a great story. You're going to go and, my luggage got lost, and this person disappeared, and my passport, and ha ha ha, because let me tell you how we got through that experience. Right? It's harrowing when you go through it, but those are the best stories. They have the conflict and the whole, they follow the storyline. There's a build-up and conflict and resolution. And life is the same way. Whatever the experience is, it's either going to work for you or it's a great story. And if you have that perspective going in, then who cares? You get what you want. You don't get what you want. You just switch gears. If it's going south, hey, enjoy the story in real time.
I've even heard the concept that you can, as they say, change the channel. Which is another way of saying that same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't have to be a drama. It doesn't have to be a tearjerker. Make it a comedy.
Do you consider what you coach to be more on a psychological or spiritual level rather than a physical, because it's really stuff that's going on the inside that you're really having to coach people through than on the what's going on the outside?
No, you know what? I think all of that happens as part of what I do. But like I said before, I am a big fan of the 2x4. A lot of the stuff that I do through companies. And personal development and company development don't always happen on the same schedule. So, I don't always have the luxury of being able to walk somebody step by step through the spiritual journey and the psychological journey. And you know what? You don't want me to. You don't want a coach to do that for you. Because if somebody else is doing that for you, then you've abdicated the one thing that you have control over, which is your own experience here, your own learning experience. So I do try and provide some teaching, but I do it, I do it tactically. Look, my fourth grade teacher had a huge impact on me. Ostensibly, he taught me how to add and subtract and multiply and divide, and he taught me about, how to dissect a book and about social studies. Right, but I got a lot of other stuff out of that year, enough so that 30 years later, however long it's been, I remember it. That's what I try and do for people. I ostensibly work on something concrete, and I try and do it in a way that they can take themselves through those more exciting journeys.
What is the one thing that you are looking to achieve, if you will, through this book, Self-Destruct?
Lighten up, folks. Lighten up. Live your life. Take control over your life. Living your own life is the second scariest thing in the world after abdicating responsibility for your life to somebody else. And man, oh man, you look around today, we are abdicating left and right. Look at our politics. John Stewart a couple nights ago had a little clip. He shows Karl Rove blasting the governor of Virginia for really having meaningless experience, and then 2 days later talking about Palin's experience as if this is the best thing ever, where her experience is less than his. Then he shows Bill O'Reilly just blasting Jamie Lynn Spears for getting pregnant as a teenager, and then he turns around and he's like, well, you know what, Bristol, whatever, this is a private affair, right? And people eat that up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, folks, you got to just sort of sit back and recognize the game is on. Everybody's in it. You can't avoid it. People will take whatever position pays them best.
Mm-hmm.
Just enjoy the process. Recognize that's afoot. And then make up your own mind. Go do the research. Go figure out what do you want. Don't just accept society's archetype of success. Don't accept somebody is good because somebody else who has a vested interest in it tells you they're good. Go ask the questions. Is this what I want? Is this the person who's going to help me? Is this the what I'm hearing from religious doctrine? Is this right? Is this going to put me on a spiritual path? Or is this the political side of politics that every religion has? And you know what? Maybe I don't need to read that one as literally as this other thing that actually is spiritual and will help me. Make those decisions for yourself.
As a former employee of a religious radio station for 15 years back in the 80s and early 90s, I remember talking with people and hearing this sort of analogy of a personal responsibility, that there's an individual standing in the middle of a field, and they're just holding their hands out as if they had their personal will in their hands, saying, I just want to do God's will. And up in heaven, if you will, God is up there, and he is so moved, he's to tears. And as he is emoting, if you will, he is compressing this thing down into the size of a baseball and hurls it down at this individual, like a 90-mile-an-hour fastball from Nolan Ryan, hits the guy square in the head and says, then do something with your life. You're not a puppet on a string being manipulated by forces you do not understand. It's your life. And if you're gonna if you're not going to do that, then when you stand before me on Judgment Day, if there is such a day, the only question I'm going to ask you is, what'd you do with your life?
Right.
Nothing. I was doing your will. I said, well, my will is for you to do something with your life.
Yeah, and you know what? If you're going to fail, fail spectacularly. Go out swinging.
Yeah.
Swing at that ball and miss. You know, there's two teams that play in the Super Bowl, and one of them leaves a loser.
Yeah.
But you know what? They played in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, get off your duff and go do it.
Yeah.
And if you win, great. And if you lose, and you don't like losing, good. And keep at it until you win.
Yeah.
You know, people who are true learners, who are truly alive, see incompetence as a temporary phase that they move through. It's not something to be feared. You don't say, well, I don't understand that. I'm never going to do it. You say, look, I don't understand that. I'm going to do it, and I'm going to learn and learn and learn, and one day I will achieve mastery.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter what area of life you're talking about. If you take that approach, win, lose, or draw, you will have lived your life.
How about you? Have you been able to incorporate the majority of these concepts, or are you learning just as the folks who buy your book and read it are? I mean, what if we could put it on a scale of 1 to 10 as far as level is concerned, achievement, high achievement is 10, and of course, absolutely no achievement is 1.
Right.
Whereabouts are you on the scale?
My story is still unfolding in real time. In 2004, I started my own business. That same year, before I said, you know, who needs the paycheck, of course, I bought the biggest house I could possibly afford by the skin of my teeth, and my second daughter arrived, and, you know, we had the move and all kinds of other stuff. And so, you know, I have a tendency to try and eat apples in one bite. Some days I come home, and it's like, all right, honey, we did it. We're here. Things are good. We've got the house. Enjoy it. And other days you come home, you're like, you know, I wonder what we can get for it in a fire sale. It's I'm trying every day. I try new stuff every day. The last 4 years, I spent 2 years with just my head up my butt. You know, I left a bigger company. I didn't want to call into any of my old clients. You know, just as an honor thing. Like, I didn't even have a non-compete, but I thought it would be wrong to even call my clients for references, because I never wanted my old employer to hear that I had been talking to these guys and then think, you know, what's going on? Is he trying to steal business? Like, I didn't want those kinds of problems.
Mm-hmm.
So I started a service business from scratch. And people looked at me like I was crazy, and rightfully so. It was kind of nuts, you know. But 4 years on, I've got a stable business, and it's moving, and I got great clients. I've worked with some wonderful people. I've got this book out. I still screw up plenty. But I've also managed to put some successes under my belt, you know, and get the business focused and, you know, and like I said, stabilize it. And I'm looking at hiring some people. You know, I'm raising what I hope are two great kids. You know, but that story unfolds day by day. Tomorrow, who knows? You know, I could have my biggest success. I could have my biggest failure. So we just take it one day at a time and enjoy it in the meantime.
And that's really one of the things that I'm hearing from a lot of the folks that we have on this program who discuss all of the various techniques and aspects of a living life. It always comes down to a common denominator, and that's enjoy or have fun in your life. Because it's your life, and what's the point of being here if you're not having fun?
It's true, but I want to make a clear distinction between living in the moment and living for the moment.
Okay.
Because we're having fun doesn't mean we're hedonistic fools. People who live for the moment, that's the hedonism. That's the, you know, we're going to go get drunk, we're going to do the drugs, we're going to, you know, throw away the future to enjoy the moment. And that's not what I'm about. And I have a very strong hunch that's not what the other people on your show are about either.
Mm-hmm.
I live very much for tomorrow. I am trying to build something bigger than myself in a lot of ways. I mean, through my kids, through my business, just in my own life, through my community service. But I do try as best as I can to live in the moment. To wherever I am, that's where I want to be. I've given up the ghost on work-life balance. There is no such thing, or at least for me, there's no such thing. You run your own company, you're in a service business. Geez, I get a call on Tuesday, can you be in New York on Wednesday? There goes Tuesday night. You know, I can't, you know, whatever work I was going to do on Wednesday, I got to get it done now Tuesday night. So I recognize that it's going to take me out of the game. I can't spend the time with the kids on that night. But you know what? On a Thursday afternoon, when I find myself with a couple hours, I'm home. I'm picking them up from school. I'm doing something. I'm there. I'm present. I'm constantly making choices to be where I am, as opposed to letting a clock run my day or just, you know, chasing my tail. There, you know, some of that's built into life, but to the extent that I can control it, you know, I want to be where I am. And that's, I think, the difference between living in the moment and living for the moment. So, you know, have fun, but don't sabotage the future.
And that's sort of a long answer to the question I'm going to ask you now, and that is, where you are right now, are you happy?
You know what? I'm young. I'm old. I don't. You know, I'm old enough to be significantly gray and to have a much receded hairline. I'm young enough to still have small kids and have a lot of energy and be able to bike to dinner. So I don't know. I'm right in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm smack dab in the middle. I've got some big conflicts behind me. I know I got some big conflict, you know, story kind of conflict ahead of me. And I wake up with a smile on my face every day. Let's bring it. There's a model I use when I coach. It's called a quality event. You know, and the quality event is living in, is kind of a way to live in the moment. You set up an objective that's achievable but really tough. You create the environment for it, and you just put yourself in the mindset, you know, an environment that's conducive to success. And then you put yourself in the mindset of, I'm going to be here and I'm going to keep at this until it's successful. And kind of the feeling of the quality event are those Friday nights when you're out with friends and everything just clicks. Everyone gets along. Everybody's jokes are funny. Nobody's on the outs. It's that perfect moment you never wanted to stop. It's that kind of feeling. And there's no rule that says those have to be by chance. You can actually create those. So I wake up in the morning, I try and create them. And, you know, if things aren't going my way that day, then I make my objectives smaller. My goals become very tactical. And my objective for the day, my overall goal for the day is I'm going to try and have a quality event today. I'm going to find something. I'm going to get myself out of my funk today. So you say, where am I at? You know, in the big picture, I'm in the middle. But day by day, every day is a new story. And sometimes it's a great story, and sometimes it's a failure. And sometimes it's, you know, I change the game in mid-course.
But it's your story.
But it's my story. At all times, it's my story.
Absolutely. Well, Jason Seiden's my guest, and we are talking about the process of self-destructing. And are there specific initial steps that an individual needs to do to begin the process of evaluating the past? I don't know whether you can avoid mistakes or those kinds of things that we're talking about, failures in the future. It's just, I suppose, part of life. But what are some of the steps that one might take initially?
You mean after buying How to Self-Destruct and reading
after buying the book, yes.
Yeah, because How to Self-Destruct will help you. It's a shift in perspective. You know, some of the things that I talk about, for instance, on the work front, some of the things I talk about are work-life balance. You know, if you let the clock rule you versus let your passions rule you, you're doomed. Because we know before we start, you're not going to have enough time for everything. So if you let other people tell you where to be when you're supposed to be, forget it, you're cooked. You know, at 5 o'clock, I'm supposed to leave work. Well, no. You know, if you are into your job and you're into that task, if you're into what you're doing, see it through, finish it. Then you'll leave fulfilled, you'll leave in a better mood. So you maybe have five fewer minutes with your friends or family, but the 45 minutes that you do have will be of a much higher caliber. One of the other things that people ask about is, you know, what people often want to do is they want to make themselves indispensable at work. And assuming for a minute that you do want to climb the ladder, indispensability is the worst thing that you could have. If you're indispensable, you're stuck where you are. You can't be moved.
Exactly.
Right? So if you have designs on one day replacing your boss, you better be making yourself dispensable. You better be automating your job or delegating it away.
Mm-hmm.
You better be able to walk. Management's a full-time job. Leadership's a full-time job. If you don't have time in your schedule to learn them, you certainly aren't going to have time in your schedule to do them. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff that I talk about in the book. You know, And whether it's by reading How to Self-Destruct or otherwise, the key to success is to take another perspective. You know, to what you were saying before, Richard, you know, looking at your life experiences and learning from them. But you have to challenge yourself. You have to assume for a second, you know, you have to ask yourself, am I where I wanted to be? And if not, you have to assume 100% responsibility for that. And then ask yourself, okay, now why aren't I here? Because if you don't assume 100% responsibility, it's going to be, wow, this person's holding me back. I married the wrong person. My kids are high maintenance. I got the new. You have to say, assuming I have everything I need to have achieved the goals, it just I didn't do it. Now you can start reflecting and actually learning and growing as a person.
Interesting. And of course, responsibility, especially in the 80s and 90s, and I, as I experienced it, that was the four-letter word that people didn't want to hear.
Oh, yeah, come on! I mean, I'm Gen X. You know, the two songs, you know, it was Nirvana, which is all about, you know, being a, you know, I'm a mosquito, is in the lyrics of their number one hit. And then you have Beck's I'm a Loser and Radiohead Creep. You know, like,
yeah,
these were the things that people were embracing. So it's, you know, that rubbed me the wrong way for a little while.
Yeah, it's strangely enough, I kind of liked that last song just because of the way it sounded, but I like it. What's with the words?
I'm trying to think.
Right, why do
problem?
I like
you're
the
like,
song?
You know, and that's the one thing I don't like about some music. It's like there are some songs that are just great songs, and you hear the lyrics, and you're like, darn it, I can't like that song anymore. Lyrics ruined it for me.
That's too funny. I love that. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program. We're going to talk a little bit more before we wrap this up because we still have about 4 or 5 minutes to go. But I want to remind our listeners that you can go to jasonseiden.com. That's jasonseiden.com. And you can check out the book, How to Self-Destruct, Making the Least of What's Left of Your Career. And I have to say that I would agree 100% with this whole business of not becoming indispensable, simply because you can't go anywhere. And so I have made it, when I've been in positions where we've had more than 4 or 5 employees, of teaching everybody else how to do the stuff I'm doing. Not so that I don't have to do it while I'm there and I get paid the same for doing less work. No, it's because if I have to go on vacation or I get sick, at least these people have a basic idea of the various tasks that have to be done.
And, oh yeah,
and I mean that's just one element as you've talked about in this program today.
Yeah, so, well, we think about it from the perspective of you know yourself as an employee as opposed to a boss. Who are you going to show loyalty to? The one who actually shows you what you need to do to get ahead, or the one who tries to keep you in a little cage, so to speak?
Yeah,
you know it's.
Yeah, and I've been extremely fortunate over my career that I have been employed and worked for employers who have, at the very least, not gotten in the way of my wanting to learn other things and then sharing those things with other people. And that's really what this program is about. We bring folks on such as yourself to share a perspective, a point of view. We put it on the table and we say, hey, this is what he has to offer. What do you think? You know, take what works for you. You know, pick up a copy, go to the website, whatever you need to do to check it out and see how this fits for you, how this resonates with you and for you, and then go from there. We're talking with Jason Seiden, and he is the author of Self-Destruct. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay with us. There's a little more to come here on Tell Me Your Story. Have yourselves a good afternoon. If you're departing, we're not going anywhere yet. We're going to tell you about who's coming up next Saturday here on this program. Tell Me Your Story, RichardDugan.com. Email me, Richard@RichardDugan.com. And again, you can listen live by clicking on the Listen Live link there at the same location. Check out JasonSeiden.com. This is Tell Me Your Story. Don't go away. Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. As we wrap up the program, Jason, thanks so much for joining us on the program. I really do appreciate your being with us today.
It was great. Thanks for having me.
And, of course, again, people can get your book on the Internet through your website, JasonSeiden.com, and, of course, through my website. They can link to you as well, RichardDugan.com. And I know that they would learn a great deal. And whether or not they agree with the terminology or not, the concepts, I think, are pretty sound in that respect, that the whole point is, you know, getting where you want to be.
Yeah. If nothing else, I think the How to Self-Destruct will help people get used to that uncomfortable feeling of being out there, of, you know, when you're living, when you're leading your own life, or when you're just, when you're living your own life, or you're leading, you're in front of the parade. Everyone's behind you. Yeah. There's no feedback. There's no markers around you to tell you how you're doing.
And believe it or not, it doesn't make any difference what the economics are in the world at the time either. I mean, all of this stuff applies regardless.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
That's exactly it.
Once again, Jason, thank you so much. Stay on the line. We'll talk just a little bit after the program. I want to let you know that next week we're going to have an interesting program as well. We're going to be talking with Cindy Dale, and she is the author of Illuminating the Afterlife. It's sort of part of our continuing series on transitioning and dealing with the afterlife as well as living here and dealing with it. Try to demystify it. Try to take the sting, the fear, the anxiety out of it for you so that you can live your life now to achieve the things that you want, be who you are, and go where you want to go. So join us next Saturday for Cindy Dale. Until next Saturday at this same time, I'm Richard Dugan, and I want to thank you so much for joining us on these programs. And, yeah, it's kind of neat to celebrate our first birthday, if you will, as a radio program. And we'll be here, God willing, and the creek don't rise, as they say. Until next Saturday at this same time, love to all. Have a great day.